are back with episode 432 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edwin from Greenville, and there are only two of you, right?
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and yes, but don't ask me which one I am, because I really don't know anymore.
Well, I'm the me from exactly 5 milliseconds from now. So, yeah,
that's what
you think. Yeah. All right, well, we are going to obviously be talking about a couple of the shows that are still left on our list, and we got through quite a few more last time than I thought that we would, so we have a few surprises that will be coming after that. But first, Edmund, if you could give the usual disclaimer. I think you do it better than I did last time.
He does.
Yeah.
Yes, and especially now that I don't have that dull roar behind me. But I need to warn everybody that we will discuss absolutely anything that might have happened in these episodes. We like to get in-depth and personal, so you will be horribly spoiled. But it's been a week or so since these have been on, so we hope you've had time to catch up.
That's right, especially if you're up in Canada, because you've had plenty of time for at least one of these shows. And I'm sure it's the one that we're going to delve in first. So do I even need to say?
No.
We're going to do a continuum, right? Okay, here's the promo.
The next continuum.
Because in the timeline without two Alex Sadlers, I don't get shot in the head.
Congratulations on your win.
And we're all very proud of you.
You're not the only one who had to make a deal with the devil.
Continuum, next Sunday at 9, only on Showcase.
And Gary, if you could do the recap here.
Absolutely. We're talking about Continuum, Season 3, Episode 2, Minuteman. A reunited Liberate kidnaps the mayor while Kira has her hands full investigating the two Alex in one timeline. At the same time, Carlos struggles with the reality-shattering truth of Kira's predicament. I'm with Carlos. I don't know who anybody is yet. I'm firmly of the theory that the Kira we're now watching is not our Kira and was never our Kira. As we're, you know, guys, have you been seeing, like, you know, the flashbacks that they're showing of her life? They just really don't seem to jive with the older flashbacks we used to see of her life. I really have the sense that we're seeing a almost completely different character, and they've just sort of slipped it in on us.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, but yeah, it does seem like she's different, and her memories are different. One thing that somebody pointed out, and I forget if I read this or I heard it on another show. And by the way, we didn't give our.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry.
We're completely out of time. But this was a Minuteman, was it?
Yes.
Okay. What would you give it?
I would give it an 8.
Okay. And Edmund?
I will go 8.5.
Okay. And I'm with you, Edmund. I would give this an 8.5. All right. Well, as I was saying before, I remembered that that's what we do now. Somebody pointed out that the father was not at all in the picture during these flashbacks. Yet last season, when there was the flashback to how Kira's sister died, the sister made the comment that at least Dad will have you. They kind of raised the question to say that, well, wait, does this mean that did they intentionally not have the father there for some plot-driven reason related to the fact that they have this debt that was kind of passed on to them? And of course, we know from other flashbacks that personal debt is the worst crime you can have at certain points in the future. So it all kind of jives up that way, but they were asking, like, okay, but it's the same question that you brought up, Gary. Like, how do we know that this person's background is the same as the person that we knew before? So Carlos actually is asking a very pertinent question. He's not just being, you know, truculent or anything like that. He's actually pointing to something that the audience should be thinking about, especially since we've also seen that the older Alex does seem to have a very different personality than he really ought to. I mean, he's a lot more hard-edged than I think he ought to be, even with what happened. And I think we mentioned that last time that we talked about the premiere, that the, you know, quote-unquote current Alex is different than the future Alex. I'm not really explaining that well, but...
No, they talk about it when she goes and... what's that? The group of time travelers.
The freelancers.
You know, they talk about it, how history does change, and, you know, how they sent back like a sort of a record back, you know, thousands of years so that they can see where history does change, because even they're oblivious to when things change unless they check the records. So they admit as well that, you know, everything's in change. And I think they even discuss the whole parallel universe type of scenario where you're coming from a different tree limb. I think they were using the analogy a few episodes ago when they described it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think they're sort of telling you that that's the case, that there are these, you know, these different people.
Yeah, and that really just opens up the show in a completely different way, which I think is reflected in those really neat and cool opening credits that they have now. Which I was kind of surprised that they went with that, but I really it kind of reminds me of when they started changing up the opening credits for Fringe to show you that, okay, now we're playing a much more serious game.
Oh yeah, it's a good video, because certainly those original credits just don't make sense now.
Well, not only that, but it feels like a brand new show to me. I mean, I continue to get that sense that we're dealing with, you know, all new characters, and if they're not, then they're writing them terribly out of their behavioral patterns. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say we are dealing with, you know, pretty much all new people, except for maybe like Carlos and the captain from anybody in the precinct. Other than that, I think all the Alexes are different. I think just about everybody's different.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, certainly. I think it's most obvious with Kira at the moment, because I know I was taken aback when we had that flashback or memory, whatever you want to term it. Since yes, it was showing the future, but after getting so used to seeing her with her later family, with her own husband and son, and getting the sense of her being this very straight and narrow, by the book sort of person, getting introduced to this young Kira who comes from this more progressive, radical family, and having to toe the line to help protect the family, was certainly a very different spin on things. That doesn't necessarily, but I was taking it that doesn't necessarily negate what we saw of her later life, but it just put a very different perspective on it in terms of why she would be so straight laced and by the book. That was this role that she had to take on as to protect her family. But it certainly is laying those seeds of how different are they, and in terms of the way the timelines are branching. Where are we going to wind up? And it was just building, I thought, on that premiere and reemphasizing, because certainly, I mean, I was having the same sense as Carlos of, you know, no, Carlos, that's your Kira in that trunk, and this one you're dealing with now is a totally different proposition. So.
Yeah, it's just it's become a frightfully complicated show. But in a very good way. I mean, this is why Rachel Nichols was saying before that, yeah, this show is delving into some of the incredibly complicated theories of time travel, but they're doing it in a way that is actually something you can follow if you just trust the writers to tell the story. Yeah, just as you were going through some of those thought processes myself, I was thinking, how are they going to go from here and actually like complicate the story further? Because you know they're going to have to. So... yeah, it's mind-boggling, but in a really good way. I mean, this is very much akin to the Fringe example, in my mind, because again, just to reinforce the fact that that was a show that started off in a very conventional place, and branched out slowly but surely, and then when it hit its third season is when it really just opened wide, and started really playing with some of these theories of alternate universes and everything else. And Continuum is just doing much the same thing with time travel and timelines and everything else. And much as we used to debate alternate timelines and alternate realities and who is who and how did this happen and how did this person's background differ from that one, we're doing exactly the same thing here. So we're probably repeating ourselves endlessly, which is only, well, appropriate for this show. Gary, how about you? Anything to add?
I am a little confused as to why why the two Alexes are so different. It would seem, as you were joking earlier on, oh, milliseconds difference. They're really less than a day apart. I'm amazed how radically different both of the characters are. It seems a little they seem too far apart. I'm not saying that they would 100% agree with everything, but I would think their core sort of beliefs or actions would still be the same. So it seems like cheap writing to me as far as those two characters go. But we never know. I'm hoping one of them runs Pyron in the future. And the other one runs. Yeah. But that's just my pet theory.
Yeah. Although I guess he was going back about a week, so it's not quite a day, but still, given the events of that week, there is the argument that with Emily's death and all he went through with discovering his dad and the decisions he had to make, it could be one of those situations where it was an extremely significant week that he went through. there is the whole wild card of how does the time travel itself actually affect you that they've thrown in there as well. So how that might have affected future Alec, I guess, is becoming the accepted nomenclature. But and then with the Alec left behind, having not gone through all that and still having Emily around and his life apparently just continuing on the path he expected it to. I can see where there is justification for the differences, but it certainly does seem extreme, given the amount of time it's actually passed.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out through the rest of the season. Which I'll be honest, I'm probably the only one of us that may be doing this, but even though I do have access to the Canadian scheduling, I'm intentionally not going ahead at this point because I found it very difficult to talk about the premiere in isolation, having gone a couple episodes past that. So I kind of took a pause and, starting with the next episode, I think I'll be seeing them roughly when the US version comes out, which is when we try to discuss it and put it out to align with the US schedule. So I don't know. I'm guessing, Gary, that you still stick to the US schedule, and Edmund probably is on the Canadian schedule. So.
I'm watching on the future continuum arc.
That's right. There you go. That's the way to put it. Right way to put it. Okay. Well, that's just.
I'm advanced as well, sir.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then I'll be the one behind. Ooh, fun. All right. That said, I guess we have one more show that we can talk about this week, and let's go ahead and run the promo for The 100.
The 100.
The Grounders didn't kill Wells. It was one of us.
So there's a murderer in the camp?
There's more than one murderer in this camp.
You killed Wells. I didn't kill anyone.
I say we float him.
Float him!
Float him!
I didn't do anything!
This is on you, Princess. You should have kept your mouth shut.
This has gone too far. Now we're killing each other.
All right, and Edmund, if you could do the recap, please.
Sure. This is The 100, Season 1, Episode 4, Murphy's Law. Clark and Finn grow closer as they try to communicate with the Ark. Meanwhile, Bellamy maintains order within the group.
Okay, and what would you give this one?
I will give this one... that's right. If I'm hemming and hawing, go in the middle, 8.5.
Okay, there you go. That's where I landed as well. This felt to me like just another step forward for the show. And I'm still just mind-boggled over the fact that this show is managing to get so many things right. Even as they introduce the specter of teen romance in the whole thing, it doesn't feel forced. It feels like a natural progression for people who are in crisis. In fact, what this reminded me of is that it's something that you see happen even on a show like Survivor, which we know is fairly contrived, right? But at the same time, sometimes the best way to get people to work with you and be, you know, part of an alliance is to form a bond with them romantically. Mm-hmm. That may not be what they're necessarily thinking in terms of a very pragmatic or overly pragmatic way, but it does play on the whole fact that these are people that are in their teens. They are obviously, you know, reacting to extreme stress and crisis. And yeah, they're going to start pairing up and grouping together and forming cliques. It's going to happen. It's the Lord of the Flies, you know, amplified by 1,000. So it just felt realistic to me that they were going in these directions. But I really liked the fact that they didn't hold back again. they found Wells' body. They mm-hmm. found the murder weapon. And instead of making it like, all these people that were in prison for the, you know, all these, you know, 90 some people that were in prison, obviously they were all there for misdemeanors because, you know, every crime being punishable by death or imprisonment, if you're below the age of 18, means, oh yeah, they all were, you know, these nice little people. No.
No.
And they're a mob. And yeah, they were ready to hang this guy to death and they got pretty darn close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of impressed by that. I was like, wow, they really went far again. Good for them.
There was the behind the scenes part of me that was thinking, it's like, oh, let's see. I guess Theseus is going to feature more in the latter part of the Continuum season.
So. Yes.
But of course, the way they resolved it, yeah, that's still a possibility. But I was impressed as well. Although that when we were talking one of the previous shows about. Trying to avoid recaps, the promos for next week, and this is actually one of the shows that kind of reinforced that for me, because the way promo was emphasizing that the stringing him up part of things, I just kind of knew, it's like, no, the way this show's going, I don't think it's just going to be complete mob mentality. It's like, no, it was there for a while, but then they did walk it back from that and actually showed the sort of the leadership and alliances starting to form as they're starting to realize that, no, we can't just be at each other's throats, literally, have to come up with some way of dealing with this incident and the incidents like it down the road. And certainly in terms of the way they've already established this, that nobody's safe, having Charlotte just basically impose the punishment on herself was another character death that managed to be both shocking and feel appropriate. And then all leading up to Murphy being banished, which I did love not that I love somebody being put in that situation, but them introducing that of, okay, you can survive if you can.
Mm-hmm. The way I put it in the review that I wrote for the episode was that it shows that kind of reluctance to get away from the harsh mentality that they were taught up in the arc of everything is either automatic death or you know, nothing, because mm-hmm. you know, they were ready to just kill the killer. That's the way that it works, right? But then they were like, no, is that right? You know, is that the way that it should be when we don't have the population intensity of the arc and the pressures of the arc? You know, we're trying to survive here. We're not, and we have, you know, room to maneuver. We don't have to do it that way. But I almost feel like they were trying to have their cake and eat it too. It's like, yeah, you know, we don't want to have the personal responsibility of putting someone to death. But if we can make it the environment is the one that's putting them to death, it's not our responsibility anymore. Yeah. And really, what did they think they were gaining from exiling him? They have nothing. So yeah, they knew what they were doing, but they were able to assuage their personal responsibility and their conscience by doing it that way. Of course, in my mind, what's going to wind up happening is that he's going to get out there and the grounders are going to find him.
Yeah.
And he's going to wind up being either, you know, brought in and become a leader among them or something. And it's going to, you know, go along those battle lines, or the grounders are only going to have their fears reinforced when they run into him, because he's such a violent jerk that,
yes,
you know, so no matter what happens, this is not a really good way to do this, because they really have not established a new law. They've just deferred it. And
yes,
whatever happens on Survivor, when you're the first ones that wind up trying to take control of everything, you're also the ones that are blamed when things go wrong. So, yeah, Clark was obviously going to be a very central person because she's the main character, for all intents and purposes, on the ground at least. But, yeah, I don't know if I were her, if I would be so willing to jump in this quickly. And whether she likes it or not, she did kind of put herself in a leadership position right away. She just, you know, now has to live up to that. But I'm sure you also want to talk about what was going on up on the Ark.
Oh, absolutely. Clark's mom, I mean, after the revelations about her being the one to basically rat out her husband, is showing even more capacity to bend the rules or completely ignore the rules when necessary. And I like them continuing to introduce these other elements, both on the ground and up in orbit. Even in this fairly limited closed society, there's still a black market. There's still criminal elements. There's still dirty deals to be done. It also, of course, certainly made sense. I mean, the way they've established the dynamics both on the ground and up on the station, that even though she was planning to go down herself, I thought they managed to turn that around again in a realistic manner, in a way that didn't feel forced. To where now, of course, it's Raven who winds up in the dropship, and Paige Turco's left to clean up the mess and try and avoid being floated once again. So, more interesting dynamics going on, and we shall have to see how that little power struggle triangle goes. And and also, just in terms of the connections between the two, I did like the fact that the attempt to use the wristbands does blow up in their face. That would have been a little, I think, a little too much sort of like Star Trek influence, where of course you've got the genius kid, kind of Wesley Crusher, who can manage to rig this thing and get them back into contact. So we do have the dropship headed down, so there may still be a chance for communications, but not quite yet. So which made sense given the way they've set things up.
Yeah, definitely. Although I do like that little implication too, that the more that the commissioner lets Abby off the hook for breaking the rules, the more that it's clear that this population crisis is actually breaking down the law and order up there. As much as Kane wants to pretend that he's just keeping the order, you can almost tell that he's like, okay, yeah, if I've got to kill 300 people, it's going to be the 300 that are, not aligned with me kind of thinking. So the Lord of the Flies thinking on the ground is actually starting to mirror itself up on the Ark. So it's definitely a lot deeper than I thought the show would be, and I'm definitely happy about that. All right, well, I think that we have hit a natural point for a slightly early mid-show break, but when we come back, we'll just catch up a little bit before we wrap everything up for the week, so stay tuned. All right, and as I promised, we are back with a little bit of discussion. I guess I'll be dominating this slightly because I was I had a little bit of venturing going on last weekend. I was at PAX East up in Boston, and this was for those who might recall, it of course is a game-oriented convention. A lot of emphasis on video games, but a huge contingent of tabletop and card games and everything that in between. But this was also last time the con that I went for 3 days and wound up kind of feeling like I didn't really need to go for 3 days. It didn't help that I was also feeling ill the second day last year and just decided to skip the third day entirely. But for me, at least, not being one to play a lot of first-person shooters or, say, World of Warcraft or League of Legends or any of these types of games, some things were lost on me and I didn't really feel comfortable jumping into a card game or tabletop game that I didn't know anything about. But I remember kind of coming away from it saying that this would be probably a really good thing to go to with the family, because then I could spend a little bit of time at the con, and then I could go and spend some time doing other things around the area with them. So this year, we wound up actually staying right in downtown Boston, which was very advantageous. Let's see. I'm just making sure that we're not having a glitch here. You guys are still on?
I'm here.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry. Just wanted to make sure. It got really quiet. Like I said, this connection is much better, and so I'm actually not getting the background hiss that I usually hear.
Anyway, I'll interrupt more often.
There you go. Just so that I know someone's out there. But anyway, yeah. So this time around, we went as a family, and stayed in downtown Boston. So literally just a couple blocks away from the aquarium, and so Saturday we went up on Friday night. And stayed overnight. Friday morning, I went with my daughter to PAX East, and my wife went with my son to the aquarium and a few other things. But basically, this was also the first con for both kids. So Saturday was my daughter's first exposure to going to a convention, and knowing that she was going to do that, she was also very much wanted to go in cosplay. And she is a huge anime fan and Japanese video game fan, so she's got this one game that she really likes. I guess Project Diva F. It's also related to something called Vocaloid, and I'm showing my ignorance here. I really don't know much about it. All I know is that she and her friends love it, and she's got one character that she really enjoys named Rin, and so she wanted to go in costume to the con, and of course, you know, I wasn't going to let her just do that by herself. I, you know, had to go in my assassin's regalia as well. So we went on Saturday, and she lasted a good four and a half hours. I was a little impressed, because when she first got there, she looked at the tens of thousands of people, and I think her eyes got about twice as big, which I guess was perfect for an anime costume. But yeah, but wow, she was definitely a bit daunted by just the number of people. And of course, Saturday is always the most packed day of any con, as far as I know. So yeah, it was definitely getting thrown in kind of into the deep end. But she enjoyed it quite a bit. She was impressed when there were people that actually stopped and knew who she was, because I told her, like, okay, you know, the video game connection here is a little obscure, so there might not be a lot of people that say anything to you. But she probably had as many people say something to her about her costume as they said to me, and of course mine was far more well-known. So I was kind of happy for her for there, and we didn't get anybody creeping, which was good too, because, you know, you probably don't want to do that when the father is right there and could stab you. it meant that I didn't have a lot of opportunity to take, a lot of pictures, because I was more leading her around and showing her around at what was all there. And, you know, we did get to sit and play some demos. There was a cool kind of throwback RPG Zelda style game called I'm forgetting it now, aren't I? I think it was Faded Haven. And she really liked that. She played the entire demo for that. We also had a card game called Anamia, which we enjoyed a lot. It's kind of like a party game, but instead of it being kind of like obscure trivia, it's really asking you questions about really well-known things that everybody would know about. So it's a good game for kids because it's not like they need to know about some subject that they've never heard about before. It's stuff in their own world as well. So we really enjoyed the demo of that, and so we picked up a pack to come play at home. And yeah, she had a really good time. And then Sunday I took my son, and of course, you know, it's definitely his first exposure to anything like this. And he didn't really want to go in costume, but one of the things that I got earlier this year for kind of as a late Christmas present was a, there is a kind of a clothier out there called Valente Designs. And they have an entire line of clothing that is inspired by Assassin's Creed. So there are some really like neat jackets and things of that nature. So I have basically, they're kind of like a springtime type of jacket. It's not a long coat. It's just a regular jacket, but it of course has the recognizable hood. And I have one in black with red accents. And so, you know, they saw me with this thing and they just think it's the coolest thing ever. Even my wife was just like looking like, oh wow, that is like really good quality work. That's amazing. So for the con, and also just because, you know, I wanted to make sure that there was some kind of equality there, I got my son a similar jacket, all in black and gray. And I don't think he's taken it off since I gave it to him on Friday before we left. And he was just roaming around this con. I thought, oh, he's going to get there. He's going to be completely out of his element. He's going to want to leave after an hour. No, he was there almost as long as she was. And he was just strutting around in that jacket.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he was loving it. And he's just like, oh, I can't wait to wear this to school. This is the coolest thing ever. And I was like, all right. So the long story short, of course, is that, I've, you know, obviously with him, he was more about the merch. He didn't even want to, like, demo anything, really. He demoed a few iPad games and such. But he was more about just the vendors. And I think I mentioned last time that this doesn't have anything close to the vendor floor of, say, a New York Comic Con. This is a fairly small section that is you know, merchandise. Everything else is either demos or presentations. So he wasn't really into the presentations. In fact, he was a little bit intimidated by those crowds. Even though I kept on telling him, I was like, I actually know some of the people that are going to be around here, so it would be nice if I could, you know, say hi. But it was not that kind of thing. So. Although he really wanted to see some of the people I know who from the Assassin's Creed meetup at New York Comic Con last year, who were also there. And there were four of them hanging out, and I swear that they posted pictures at least three times throughout the day of spaces that we were there, like literally like 2 or 3 minutes earlier. It's like, we keep missing them, and he was just like, but I really want to see, because they, you know, they do really good costumes, and I want to see that for real. And so, yeah, he missed it, but he did see some other things, and he was amazed at some of the other stuff. But I think they've both been bitten now by the con bug, which is good. Although, clearly, they will not be accompanying me to Dragon Con or to New York Comic Con. But there are some local events, and they both have their own interests, right? My daughter definitely is leaning more towards the anime interests, where my son is more along the Comic-Con, maybe like more of a dealer's floor type of thing, where there's more stuff for him to look at and buy and see all the little goodies. Cause I mean, they had like Minecraft stuff, and they had these little figurines that were for games that he's never even heard of, but it didn't matter cause he really thought they were cool. So yeah, that's how we'll separate it out. I doubt that they'll actually, well, I'll ever find one thing that they're both really into to go at the same time. But, later this, spring, I guess it's, spring, early June, here in New Jersey, in Somerset, there is a con called Anime Next. And quite a lot of the people here on VOG that are local to the New York area, especially the folks over at Anime Jam Session, and I think Electric Sisterhood also, they've been there quite frequently. But that's one of the local cons that's it's not huge. It's probably, you know, the right size for the venue that it's in, or just about ready to break into a larger venue. But it's more local, it's a smaller number of people, and it's right up our alley. So I think that's something that we'll be looking into, because now even though my wife did not go to the con, she was like, no, I know that's not my thing. I'm going to let you go and take the kids. It was kind of nice. She was like, it's good enough for me to just have, you know, be able to go hang out in Boston. That's fine. Well, she's also not the type that really likes big crowds. So just imagine, you know, hey, dear, let's go hang out on the, you know, floor with tens of thousands of people. Yeah, that wouldn't have happened. So, you know, she gets a little bit overwhelmed when we go to, like, Disney World and stuff. If it's a crowded time of year, she would much prefer to not do that. So, yeah, she knew it was not her thing, and she's also like, this is something that you can do with the kids. I'm like, yeah, and you're thinking, hey, that's you taking the kids, and I get the day to myself. And it's like, hey, everybody wins. So, yeah. It's cool, though, because, you know, she even though it's not her thing, she definitely feels like it's good to foster the kids in the ways of the geek. Because she enjoys a lot of this stuff. She just doesn't enjoy it to that degree. But, yeah, so, hey, in a couple months, I may have a report on Anime Next and see how that goes. But I think then that also is kind of fostering and enabling me for Dragon Con, definitely, because staying in downtown Boston for a weekend actually might have been more than I would need to spend going to Dragon Con, so I think, like I said, that may have just bought the ticket there. But anyway, that's it for our week, unless you guys had a few questions or anything that I didn't cover about the con.
Not about the con. I did want to mention, it's not a show we usually discuss, but I just want to mention how good it's been is the Cosmo series that's been out lately with Neil deGrasse Tyson. It continues to really be an amazing show, and I'd like to think it shows you scientific things without being too techie about it. He's got a very nice, easy cadence about it, the way he describes things. Everybody does like to compare him to Sagan, and I think Carl Sagan stands by himself. But regardless, Neil does a very good job. And if you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, I would. It is sciencey, but at the same time, I don't think it's uber techy. It's explained in ways I think most people won't have any problem understanding.
Yeah, I would agree. We only watched the first episode so far, but then we decided to record the other one so we could just kind of watch it in a marathon at some point. Especially with the spring breaks coming up for the kids. And okay. We're actually going to this Easter, we're not actually going anywhere. So it's just going to be us, and so we'll have a little bit of time to just catch up on a few things. Like, they still haven't seen The Winter Soldier. So,
oh my gosh. Oh,
yeah. Speaking of our next show, I think we're going to be delving into that one way or the other. So that and the associated Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes. So look forward to that.
Yep, and I just wanted to jump in just to let people know that if all this talk of Assassin's Creed has you harking back to Florence, I have been greatly enjoying in its now second season Da Vinci's Demons, which is what came on Stars after Black Sails, and it's basically a very fun compared to Cosmos, not intended to be realistic, just over the top reimagining of what Da Vinci's early years might have been like if you were writing it as a hysterical fiction novel.
perhaps hysterical.
Yeah, perhaps not quite as he knows everybody like Sleepy Hollow is, but kind of in the same sort of vein. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. And they're four episodes into their second season now.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for the update. All right, as I said, we are going to return next time with all things Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D. So I hope everyone else is looking forward to that as much as we are looking forward to talking about it. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that critical misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...